Yeah, I forgot my words too, so I think I'll just go sit down. Oh, goodness. So, it's really great to see all of you here today. What a beautiful Sunday it is, and how blessed are we, you know? I was thinking as Nadine was singing, and you know, after the beautiful reading that Hugh did, and the clapping and the prayer and the even like the announcements, Rita, you know, with your cute little accent, and then Nadine forgot her words, which made me so happy. not from any like competitive thing, but just because it just was so, it was so perfect, it was so right, and it reminded me of this Richard Rohr thing where he talks about Richard Rohr is a Franciscan mystic, in case you haven't heard of him. He talks about how there's so much grace that we can't take all of it all at once, and maybe we couldn't hear the grace of those first words for just a few moments as we were all recovering from sacred stones, you know, and you're just kind of gearing up, okay, maybe they can, something inside of you, maybe they can take the grace. Nope, not yet, Chris, not yet. And bless Chris's heart, his cute little face when the singer can't remember something. Anyway, the point is that it's all wonderful. It's all God, and I just keep saying that. And the more I practice, the more I read, the more I study, the more I experience even the darkness and the light, the more it feels like it truly is all this absolute reality. It's all love. It's all something that is beyond words. And so that's why I am delighted to tell you today something about myself that I haven't really fully admitted before, so I'm going to do it like this. My name is Bonnie, and I am a sugar addict. And then you say, good job, good job. You know, and I don't think I've ever been that bold about it. I've sort of known about it for a while, have been in denial. I've been falling into the sugar hole for many years and saying, it's not my fault. It was Hugh's birthday. I had to, you know. But I'm really excited about being able to say out loud that I'm a sugar addict, because the path of recovery, which has been two whole weeks, has been incredible. It's been delightful. And I share this with you not like as this is my confessional or this is my own private vomitorium where I can just spew forth everything. See, that's one of those surprises you mentioned in your prayer, where I can spew forth, you know, everything that's on my mind or everything about me. But I'm wondering if anybody else here is addicted to anything. I'm actually really wondering if anybody here has no addictions, is not addicted to anything. Because Richard Rohr says that we are all addicted to something, and many of us are addicted to one substance or another. For me, it's sugar and caffeine. I'm not willing to give up the caffeine quite yet, but the sugar and caffeine. And for others, it may be a substance. It could be something like a drug, like sugar or caffeine. It could be marijuana. It could be alcohol. It could be a stronger drug, like, I don't know, crack, meth, whatever. But it could also be things like Facebook or looking at your phone, or any screen, the computer, email, and then there's all kinds of mental addictions like worry and projection and fear and all of these things that have become habits over time and have escalated to the point of addiction so that we don't even question them. We fall in the hole and we wonder why we're there, but it has nothing to do. We say it has nothing to do with us. It's just the way reality is. When really, reality is perspective. Reality is our projection. So today is about looking at all of that and seeing how we can use the principles that I'm going to talk about in terms of moving through the addiction with an embrace, with loving it and recognizing that it's there as our teacher. It's there to help us go ever deeper into the mystery, into the divine absolute that we already are. So if you want to take just a minute and see if maybe you have an addiction that you'd like to work on in this time together, would you like to play with, or you'd like to celebrate? There's no requirement to give it up, but if you want to, just hold that in heart and mind and being as we go through this message today. Because the thing I've noticed about addiction in terms of this past couple of weeks when I've been working with the sugar addiction is that addiction robs us of our power. And we may not know it when we're really into it, when we really want to do it. You know, because many people confuse addiction with freedom. I have a right to do that. Many people confuse addiction with power. It makes me feel powerful. It makes me feel good when I do that. But really, I find that the way out of addiction is to recognize that addiction does rob us of our power because it separates us. It puts up a wall between us and anything that needs to come up. And also, the way out of this stealing of power is through paradox. That it is discipline that gives us freedom. And that it is powerlessness that gives us power. You know, which step is it? The one about I am powerless over my addiction, right? Yeah. Which one? First? Okay. I haven't read them for a while. Perhaps it would behoove me to read them. The first step is that, I don't know, tell me the exact words. What?
We accepted that our lives had become unmanageable because of alcohol or whatever it was, and we were powerless over alcohol.
Okay, I can't repeat all that. So we accept that our lives have become unmanageable because of what the addiction is, and that our lives, that we are powerless over the addiction. Okay, thank you, David. David works in a rehab facility, right? Yeah, so you would know. Okay. All right, so the way that I'm going to be looking at this today is through the lens of powerful vulnerability, that in order to overcome, embrace, make friends with, and transcend addiction is through powerful vulnerability. One of the best ways that I have learned to do this recently, and one of the reasons I'm delighting in releasing this sugar addiction, is because of the work that we're doing in the We Three class. The We Three class is based on this book that we're reading here. It's the featured book of the month. It's called The Holy Trinity and the Law of Three by Cynthia Bourgeau. And it's based on a Gurdjieff philosophy. Gurdjieff was an Armenian philosopher, a mystic, and sort of a bad boy of spirituality. And he had some sort of bad boy. And he had some sort of out there theories. But this law of three business is, I think he's tapping into something really wonderful. And Cynthia Bourgeau echoes it in a way that is far more understandable to me than reading Gurdjieff. And what the law of three is, I know a lot of you have been coming, but I'm going to go over it again because I find in teaching the class that you can't say it too much because people still, myself also, we continue to refine the definition of what it is. It's a natural law that is happening all the time around us, but if we become conscious of it, then we can work with it instead of working against it. So the law of three is like this. In a creative process, there is what we might call an affirming factor or a first force. And that affirming factor wants to create something in the world. It is like a forward thrust. And then there is a denying factor, the second force. And that is something that kind of gets in the way of this forward thrust. You know, it can be this thing that you want or this thing that you don't want that's blocking it, right? And then if we hold these together and keep pushing up against them, pushing them together, they don't go anywhere. It's just like just pushing, and they're equally strong, and they don't have any movement. But what we do instead is that we open ourselves up, I would say through mindfulness, to a reconciling factor. And the reconciling factor is part of the law of three, and it has the capacity to neutralize these two forces and create a solution or a shift in consciousness that is usually something that we haven't thought about using our normal, regular, everyday consciousness, but that takes us to a higher level past just the conflict of opposites, takes us past a compromise and creates a win-win-win. A win for this person, a win for that person, or this idea and that idea, something that reconciles it, that brings it to a new level of perfection, including everything. Okay, so that's what the law of three is. Now, within the law of three, there is this thing called the law of seven. And I'm going to ask you not to get too caught up in these numbers, okay? Don't get too caught up in this. Just know that there's a process. The law of seven is actually based on the octave. So in terms of explaining the octave, you know, it's a musical term, right? I thought I'd start at the very beginning, a very good place to start. When you sing, you begin with what? Do, re, mi, do, re, mi. The first three notes just happen to be do, re, mi, do, re, mi, do, re, fa, sol, la, ti, do. Oh, I'll make it easier for you. Okay, that's enough. Thank you. Thank you. So it sounds like a lot of you are familiar with Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do, right? And it's a scale. It's a major scale, and it's made up of half steps and whole steps. Between the third and the fourth note of the scale, mi and fa, there is a half step. And between the seventh and the eighth step of the scale, there is a half step. Again, don't worry too much about what that is. I'm going to probably refer to it as the mi fa shock and the ti do shock. That's what Gurdjieff calls it. But what it really is, it's a place where your normal progression, you set an intention and you're going through a progression, right? And there are places where that progress naturally loses energy. And you may think that you've done something wrong because you're losing energy, you're losing focus, but you haven't. There are just places in processes that naturally lose energy. And when you're in that place of natural energy loss, you have to become mindful, see what it is, and apply additional resources in order to keep moving up the scale versus going back to do and starting over again. It's like falling in the hole. Okay? You can either take a walk around the hole by going up the scale, or you can fall into the hole by doing the same old thing. And this is a lot easier to relate to. What? I did it? Oh, thank you. Thank you. He's the expert. I get a lot of this stuff from him, my husband, because he studied Gurdjieff for many, many years. So anyway, enough about my husband. Enough about my jacket. Yeah. Some of this stuff is easier understood with an example, so that's why I'm talking about sugar addiction today, really, because it's really been a profound example for me of how this stuff really works. The way that I tend to fall in my choice points and go back to the beginning of the scale, go back to do, the way that I refrain from transcending the mi-fa shock, the choice point, where I can be mindful and do something else, it used to happen every single day. And I would go on a hike, a long hike, a 6 to 10 mile hike. And when I was done, I would say, I deserve to go to Starbucks and get a cookie. And I would say, oh, no, 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 you set an intention. You weren't going to eat cookies anymore. You ate a preventative banana so you wouldn't have to go to Starbucks. But I would get in the car, and somehow through autopilot, I would be, I'm not going to Starbucks, and then I would be right there at Starbucks, and somebody would be there force-feeding me a cookie. It's like I had to, and that is falling in the hole over and over again. So what became very powerful for me was to notice that mi-fa shock, to notice that place, where I have a choice, and to apply resources to it so I didn't fall into that hole again, so I could keep moving up the octave, okay? What I ended up doing is I'll tell you that in a minute. I want to talk a little bit more about the generic application of resources to that choice point. So, some of you may be wondering, what does that mean? What does application of resources actually mean? And it really can mean a lot of different things. There are many, many different things that we can do at that point. First of all, we have to see it. We can become mindful. We have to recognize that it's not mandatory to go to Starbucks and get a cookie. We actually do have a choice. I was speaking with my friend Jerry, who's someone that I met when I was in India, and he's a very knowledgeable guy. He knows a lot of movers and shakers in the spiritual world and in the business world and in the activism world. He won a Nobel Peace Prize for some of his activism work that he did, and I was telling him about this business, about this choice points within the octave, and I asked him his opinion about it, and he quoted somebody famous, I can't remember who it was, but he said, so-and-so would say that you need to out your self-deception, out your self-deception, your assumptions, and your lies. I'm going to talk first about lies and self-deception are sort of the same thing, because you're lying to yourself. Even if you think you are, you probably are, okay? if you think you're not, you probably are in some way. So let me first talk about assumptions. You know, the thing is that we're taught not to assume. You've all heard that thing, when you assume, you make an S out of you and me, right? So we're taught not to do it, but because we're human, because we have partially an animal brain, we are taught to assume. I know a lot about assumptions in animal brain, because I have dogs. The other day, my husband got me a pre-birthday present, turning 60 in September. Not that I have any bad feelings about that, but no, I'm very happy about it. But anyway, my husband brought me this statue of a large bunny. We're getting bunnies at the church as part of our kindness teaching and other things. And my husband and I are actually, for my birthday, we're getting the mature birthday gift, which is a Flemish giant rabbit. Because I am 60 going on 17. I know that I'm a mess. Losing control from ever. Never mind. Okay. Never mind. Okay. So, you didn't expect Julie Andrews to show up today, did you? Anyway, yes, surprise. It's Mary's fault. She prayed for surprises. Anyway, we got this large statue of a bunny because we're getting a very, very large bunny that's about 20 pounds. You know, think about the killer rabbit in Monty Python, right? Okay. Yeah. So my husband got it, put it in the yard. I went out to see it, and the dogs came out with me, and it was like Satan had landed in the backyard. They were horrified by this bunny. They were just baying at it, going, woo, 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 woo. It's awful. I had to like sit by it and pet it for a while and say, see, it's a nice bunny. And then, no, and it gets worse. All night long, my little girl, my girl dog, Saraswati, all night long, coming out to see if that evil, satanic bunny was still there, barking at it, waking the neighbors. And then, even worse, we were having a party and my husband moved it. And the whole thing started over again. The bunny had its me-fa shock, I guess. And the whole thing went back to dough, whatever. And my dogs went back to dough. And the whole thing started again because it moved. It moved and it was alive. They knew it was alive. And finally, they got over it. But you see, that's the assumptions. That's the assumption that we make about various things. We are all frequently barking at reality or barking at ourselves because of assumptions that we are making, right? They assume that it was alive. We're assuming that this is mandatory. This cookie that I need at Starbucks is mandatory, or this thing that you need to do is mandatory, right? Or you have to. You have the right to it. And that's where the lying comes in. Huh. I know the congregation loves it when I talk about lying, how we're all liars. Get it? Should we just say it? Can we just affirm? I am a big, fat, stinking liar. Everybody. Okay, you may not want to affirm that, but let me clarify what that is. I'm a big, fat, stinking liar. I had a friend who was a practitioner in another church, and she ended up quitting, not because of what I said, but she ended up quitting because she came up to me one day, and she's like, you know, I never lie. And I was like, you just did. Because I'll tell you how subtle these lies are. Okay, the lie about the Starbucks cookie is, I did a 6-mile hike, I deserve a cookie, I know that I promised that I wasn't going to do it, but I'm going to do it today, just this once. I will start tomorrow. Yes. There's a third one too. What's the third one? This cookie won't do anything. I'll be good for the rest of the day. If I have this cookie, I'll be good for the rest of the day. And when I eat a cookie in the morning, I find that the whole day is sort of a downward-facing glissando of sugar. So anybody familiar with lies like this? You know, just this once, I'll start tomorrow. So that's what I'm talking about with lying. You may not deliberately go and lie on purpose, deliberately on purpose. No, you may not do that. But what you may do is tell yourself little falsehoods so that you can have what you want. Another one is, it's only sugar. It's only sugar. It's not like crack. It's only sugar, right? What? It's worse. Well, it certainly is compelling, and it comes in many forms, and it's readily available, too. I'll see you later. I got to go back there and do something. No. So anyway, just applying the extra resources that I applied in that moment of wanting to go to Starbucks and getting a cookie was various things. Different things worked at different times. I would just sort of question my assumptions and my lies. You know, one of the things I would tell myself is, you need it, or you deserve it. And I would just say, you know, Starbucks is actually farther than your house. So if you go home first, you'll get to eat sooner. Or what if you could just wait? What if you could wait and then eat something nutritious when you get home? And then you start building that habit, and that's when you start walking down the street and you're seeing the hole, but you're not falling in. And you start feeling better, you know? So I was with that, and this is a shift in consciousness now, because like I said, Richard Rohr says that people have physical habit addictions, and they also have habits of consciousness that are addictive thoughts that go on and on and on, and we never question them. We assume that they're true because we're thinking it, right? And it may be a lie. So early on in this sugar business, I was I was writing something, and I started doubting what I was writing, and I just said, oh, you know what, see what you're doing? You're denying your talent. You do that a lot. And I just like, oh, I can't think about that right now. The sugar thing is too hard. I'm not going to think about that. I'll just keep denying my talent and and just, you know, pretend I'm not really worth much. And so I did that, and I kept on going, and I kept on working with the sugar addiction. And then one day when I was in Vaughn's shopping, there was... there's a lot of sugar in Vaughn's. Yeah, and there's also a Starbucks in Vaughn's, you know, and I was lusting after, you know, have you ever had those, they used to only make them in New York, but now they're here, unfortunately, those black and white cookies, right? Right? Aren't those, they've got like sugar icing, you're from New York, you're from New York, yeah. They've got that sugar icing on them, they're so good, and I would sort of do like a spiritual thing with them, you know, it's black and white. Ebony and ivory live together in perfect harmony, right? I was making a statement for equality there, but you know, I was lusting after the cookies, and then all of a sudden, I said to myself, "Is this cookie going to support your life force?" I said, "Oh no, it's not. It's not." And then I had the joy of shopping and asking everything that I wanted to put in my basket, are you going to support my life force? And if the answer was no, it wouldn't go in my basket. If the answer was yes, I put it in. And I started recognizing that this denial of life force through sugar is a way of self-doubting. And it's a way of saying, I'm not worthy. And I'm not worth taking the time to cook something, right? So that's moving up the octave into something new. And I recognized also that for the last year or so, I've had this intention of sort of spreading the values that we teach at this church, having a wider reach with them. And I recognized how often somebody will ask me to do something, and I say no, because I don't think I'm good enough or I'm worthy enough. And so that revelation about the sugar and the life force led to saying yes more. And now I'm delighted to be doing things around the world, a global conference call and other things like that. I can't think of them off the top of my head right now, but many, many, many things. So you see, it all, that thing that we say, that this addiction is just sugar, or this addiction is just whatever, it does tend to sap our power and sap our life force. And when we take the time to move through it consciously and mindfully and look at our choice points, whether it's a thought or an action or a habit, even an emotion, they can be addictions too. There is great power to be had within that moment. I wonder, you know, a lot of people in Science of Mind, Ernest Holmes quoted Jesus quite a bit in the textbook, even though he was, I would call him an interfaith teacher. But one of the favorite Science of Mind quotes is this. This is from Jesus, and it's from the book of John, chapter 14. And he says, believe me when I say that I am in the Father and the Father is in me, or at least believe the evidence of the works themselves. Very truly I tell you, whoever believes in me will do the works I have been doing, and they will do greater things than these, because I am going to the Father. And I will do whatever you ask in my name, so that the Father may be glorified in the Son. What that means, I would say, in Science of Mind terms is this. Believe in wholeness. When I say that I am wholeness, we can say this for ourselves, I am wholeness, and the absolute reality of wholeness is in me. Or at least believe the evidence of absolute reality, of wholeness that I see. And very truly I tell you, whoever believes in wholeness will do the works that I have been doing, and they will do greater things than these. Because I am wholeness, I am going to wholeness, I am already there, and I will do whatever you ask in the nature of wholeness, so that the absolute reality, spirit, may be glorified in the absolute reality of matter. That's quite a translation, right? I'm not sure that the fundamentalist Christians would agree with me, but, however, anybody? No? Okay. Talk to me later. Anyway, I think that it's that thing. You know, people hear that verse about these, I usually phrase it as, these things you shall do and more, right? And people think, well, am I supposed to be raising the dead? Or, you know, I practiced on a dead bird and nothing happened. And, you know, am I supposed to be healing the sick? How about turning water into wine? You know, shouldn't I be doing those things? And I think what that means is that this message that I'm giving to you about my own custom-made sugar addiction is custom-made for you as you internalize it and take the principles and apply it to your own life in very, very specific and absolute and wonderful ways. You know, because the thing is that these principles are universal, and I'm just giving you my version of it, but they apply to each of us so deeply and so powerfully, but we have to do the work of allowing them in and letting them happen. Cynthia Bourgeau, and that's how you do greater things, rather. That's how you do greater things, because they are applied to your life. They are greater than what I do, because they're applied to your life. Do you get that? Okay, good. I'm kind of babbling, but I'm gonna stop in just a minute. Okay. So Cynthia Bourgeau talks about how in the symbol of the cross, you know, I'll do like an even cross here, right? She talks about how there is a horizontal plane, which is reality, which I would call law. The law of three, the law of seven, the law of cause and effect that we talk a lot about here in Science of Mind. And then there's also vertical reality, which we call love. And she says that the symbol of cross is the intersection of these two places. This is, I would say, this is Vishnu, the denying factor, or the sustaining factor. And this is Brahman, the place, the one that wants to inject itself into spiritual reality. Spirit and matter. And the places where they intersect is the reconciling factor, right? Grace intersects at every point of your life. And she talks about how there is this horizontal plane and this vertical plane, and the vertical plane intersects constantly, all of the time, when we allow it. And in that knowing, in that allowing, all possibilities are real. All possibilities are real. So there is a great possibility for your life. There is a great possibility for your freedom. There is a great possibility for your empowerment, your joy, your beauty, your creativity, your realization of the absolute reality in everything. There is a great possibility, and it looks like you. It looks exactly like you. When you look in the mirror, instead of saying, I'm a big, fat, stinking liar, you could say, I'm a big, fat, stinking possibility. Let's hear that now. I'm a big, fat, stinking possibility. That's right, because you are. And so using these principles will help you get there. And I hope that you take some of this to heart and apply it in a dedicated manner to your own life. Do it for yourself. Do it for your family, do it for your friends, do it for your coworkers, and do it for the whole world. Because the work that we do here in this center of love, where we are love, where we share love, and where we serve love, blesses all beings everywhere. Let us serve love now, and let us pray. Thank you.